brought to you almost live from the Dude in the Basement Studios. Why? Because that's where the good stuff is. It sips, suds, and smokes with your smoking host, the good old boys. It's sippin' time.
Welcome to the Sips episode, where everything good in life is worth discussing. We are the best thing on at 2 a.m., and we thank you for choosing to listen to us instead of the BBC Scotland program called Out of Doors and the riveting episode this week about how to identify songbirds by their songs.
Hey, you arrested bastard. You don't like Scottish people. What's wrong with you?
Brett, I want to ask, what does your song sound like, man?
What does it sound like? You'll hear it. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I know exactly what it sounds like. So there you go. Hey, this is Good Old Boy Mike, and joining me here on this show today is Made Man Brett.
It's always a pleasure to be here.
Made Man Bob.
Howdy, howdy.
Good old gal Carrie Ann.
Hello.
Good old boy Jason.
Hello.
Made Man Maury.
I'm here.
Good old boy Justin.
Hello.
And good old gal Denise.
Hello, everyone.
Our sip segments are all about wine, distilled spirits, tea, and coffee. On this episode, we're going to be discussing rye whiskey, but in the most unique way that you've ever heard.
Now, upside this is a down? Blind.
No.
Wearing a dress?
Backwards. The Cuban way.
Rubber nuns outfit?
Yeah.
I'm going to wear pants today?
No.
This is a blind tasting of all MGP six-year rye from different non-producing distillers using the exact same MGP product. That's right. We did that thing that you and your whiskey buddies have talked about for years and that strikes fear in all of these producers. We're going to actually tell you more about this fascinating exercise in a moment. But first, Denise is going to give us the lineup that we're going to have in this blind tasting.
I don't mind if I do. So this morning, the six-year rye whiskey we are going to discuss today are Rebel Yell, Rabbit Hole, James E. Pepper, Nashville Barrel Release Number 3, Templeton, Sagamore, and Redemption.
So a really great lineup, you know, that we have going on for this show today.
Hey, Mike, that's only 7. Or if you need to know what that is, 33 and a third of 7 is 2.331.
Thank you, math wizard of the legal profession. Carrie Ann was using all of her fingers and also arrived at only 7. Now, there's a zinger in this flight, but that's not quite time to reveal just what I did to all of you. Bob, you rarely get to go over our SIPs ratings, but the challenge today is, can you make it sound like you're one of the distillers that just found out that they were at the bottom of this blind tasting?
I'm just still trying to figure out why Carrie Ann's only got 7 fingers.
It's Southern math. It's Alabama math. That's what it is.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, yeah. Damn. I'm telling you.
Is that missing chromosome?
I knew that it would go down hard.
Well, when a couple of them are ground together like that, so.
Yep.
All right, we're going to be tasting these rye whiskeys and rating them with these SIPs ratings plus our signature sounds, and we're doing it as one of the folks here that thought they were going to do well and didn't do actually well. So, one sip. Give me a glass of water to wash out my mouth.
Water.
That was the dejected one. Let's go with the angry one. Nice, what else do you have? Okay.
Well, isn't that nice?
Sarcasm? Interesting. What was this again?
Interesting.
Very pissed off.
Very pissed off? Let's keep this a secret, you son of a... Pour me another.
That's classified.
How about pretending that I don't really care? I was unaware anything could be that good. Who cares?
Oh, my goodness!
Yes!
Any of those would apply.
So like Mike mentioned, this episode is a blind tasting on MGP 6-Year Rye. If you want a primer on Midwest Grain Products or MGP, check out an episode that Mike and I did in our back catalog called Love That Indiana Whiskey. We will include a link in our show notes. MGP, or as I still call them, LDI, is the largest producer of rye whiskey and is used by some 100-plus brands. All of their 95.5 rye is 95% European rye and 5% malted barley. All these products except the Zinger are using this mash bill. In full disclosure, I am a non-distilling producer and know the MGP products quite well. While I have not used MGP products so far, I've considered it for their rye. It is the most recognizable rye in America. The next largest rye whiskey producer is Alberta Distillers, LTD, or ADL. They make iconic brands like Canadian Club and is used in US-based brands like Whistle Pig and Masterscent. I would like to point out, it is frustrating that in America, we are not required to say the source of our spirits. We use statements like produced by to hide who actually distilled the product. We have to report it to the government for formula approval, but do not have to put it on the label. I look forward to the day that America catches up with Scotland and Mexico with proper reporting of where things are distilled.
I don't know. I've had a few that I really don't want to know where it's coming from, to be honest.
Jason, I just got lost trying to calculate 33.3% of all this, so I'm going flat fee. Where do I send this bill?
Let me make this super easy for the legal scholar. They make the whiskey at this big factory, and then other people buy it, brand it, and sell it to you for at least 33.3% markup or higher. Got that math now, counselor?
Look at him smile.
That makes sense. Yeah.
As soon as he hears a third, he smiles.
That third that puts him over the edge.
Mm-hmm.
What Mike has done for us, he's tortured us with tasting all 8 of these products blind. And while all are the same whiskey, they have a huge price range from $29 to $110 a bottle for the exact same whiskey. Not everyone in this flight is aging the whiskey in the same way. Some of these producers are aging these products and bottling them at MGP, where others are taking the whiskey in barrels after 3 years and then aging it out in another location. So we intentionally tried to avoid single barrel products, products that are blended with non-MGP whiskey or secondary finishing barrels, just trying to keep that all a level playing field. This is, arguably the most level playing field that we could put together for the same age, same mash bill, same producer.
So we talked a little bit earlier, prior to turning on the mics, was some things that are influencing some of that price. And Jason chimed in about there's a lot of huge variance in contract pricing from MGP over time.
Yeah, absolutely. It very much depends on how old your contract is as prices have gone up, because bourbon is a commodity.
So that is one thing that has influenced, this huge price range of these products, because some of these products have been out for 10 years, even maybe longer, and have enjoyed, the aggressive contract prices that were available, at that point in time. There are products in here that have, only recently been purchased over the last year as well. And you're seeing some of that huge price increase, from MGP directly, reflected in some of the bottle pricing here as well.
Absolutely. And I think you're even seeing some middlemen markup price. Because as bourbon is a commodity, investment groups have invested heavily in that commodity and raised the price up themselves, being suppliers of this so-called commodity.
So there's a lot of things here that are influencing some of that price range, both time, contract pricing from MGP, as well as the how direct, the NDP, may be getting that whiskey itself if it's going through another source and really having to bear that additional cost as well. So there's a lot of things, to keep in mind here. But at the same point in time, from the consumer's perspective, what's in the bottle is exactly the same. And so, you should really keep some of that in mind, that while it may be difficult to understand or navigate a lot of those components that may be contributing to that price variation, what's in the bottle? It's all MGP 6-year rye at the end of the day. So it really is quite an interesting conversation that we're going to have today around the 6-year rye. Bob, you had a question?
Yeah. What's the zinger?
Yeah, I knew you'd get to that. Princess of patience. So
my mother didn't raise anybody with patience.
At least he's a princess of something.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
I'll always be your princess.
So listen, our approach today is we're actually going to go over our top three in reverse order. So you'll have to hang around, you know, a bit so you'll actually understand what our number one pick is.
Only way you're getting anybody to hang around and listen to this.
Yeah, we have a lot of great things that we're going to be talking about on the next two segments. Not only our top three, but we're going to talk about our bottom choice and kind of what we thought about, you know, the exercise in general. A lot of lessons learned that I think we all had. You know, we always learn an awful lot through each of our blind tastings. Bob saying no. He just has one question for us.
Nah, never learn anything.
Yes. And, of course, Justin's going to continue to ask, what is 33 and a third of every math element that's on here as well?
So, he has another question. His other question is always, is this a billable hour?
Absolutely. Well, I hope you'll come back and join us here for our next segment. We're going to take a one-minute break, and we'll be right back. We'll talk about our number three pick out of this blind tasting.
Clouds and crashing surf, iridescent dunes reflecting by the light of a rising glowing moon. Seashore mesmerizing, night breeze hypnotizing, we've come across these back roads none too soon. Look to the left, to the right, keep your eyes on the road, my darling, wondering if we're only passing through. Open roads and open windows, my hand is yours forever, sweet love.
Hey, welcome back to Sip, Suds, and Smokes. On today's episode, we are going over a blind tasting of MGP 6-year rye, and we're going to go through our top three picks in reverse order. Brent's going to introduce our number three pick out of the blind.
Thanks, Mike. Our number three is an MGP 6-year rye product. This is Templeton. It's one of the products is age stated as 6 years. This has been on the market for a while, since 2010, and we have not reviewed this product before, so this is a new product for us to review. This is they have a 6-year product. They have a 6-year product that's blended with a 10-year. But for our purposes, we're just doing the 6-year product. It came in at number three. It's got some dry rye notes, a little bit of caramel to it and stuff on your nose, on the palate. It's not my typical MGP rye. I don't get that right away at all. I get some caramel. I get some cherry. I get some oak. I get a little bit of herbal notes. And you know, for me, it was just a little bit off-putting because it wasn't a typical MGP.
This product retails for $35. Jason, what do you think of this one?
I'm going to agree. It's not your typical MGP rye. I didn't get any of that overall menthol, mint, grassy flavor that I normally get from MGP rye. I got a lot of sweetness and a lot of caramel from this. I very much appreciated this product.
Bob, what do you think of this?
This one really kind of split it for me. The palate on it, I love. The palate was really nice. you know, had a really nice, big, bold, deep flavor. Some burnt sugar, almost like English toffee. You know, it's got a good mouthfeel to it. But the nose on this one was just almost sickly sweet to me for some reason. I don't know if I've got reverse COVID or something, but it was just, it was too sweet for me. It was sort of overpowering.
I kind of want to know what the symptoms of reverse COVID are.
Yeah, the herbal notes on this one is what put me off on it for me.
Yeah, but the palate was fantastic. I really liked the palate. I rated it really high on that, so.
Denise, what do you think of this product?
Well, you know, in a lot of our episodes, Bob and I tend to be on the same wavelength. And so definitely for me, I wouldn't say sickly sweet, but it was definitely really sweet on the nose.
It was over the top. It was, yeah.
A really sweet floral sort of note to it. Not off-putting, but just more sweet than I would typically love. But I thought that on the palate, it came through with I think, what did you say, Bob? Brown sugar, yeah, like, burnt
like
sugar.
Dark brown, burnt sugar, like English toffee.
Yeah, I got toffee, some like toasted coconut. Yeah. I mean, I thought it had a nice mouthfeel. The finish was a little bit.
We're always in sync.
We're always in sync. The finish was a little bit shorter than I like, but you know, overall, I thought it was really nice.
Well, cool. So our sips rating here for the Templeton 6-Year Rye is going to be a sips rating of 3.
Interesting.
So where's the zinger?
Yeah, I know.
Not just yet, Princess of Patience. But our number two.
Zinger, 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 zinger.
But our number two MGP 6-year rye product is fairly new at the time of this recording. It's not widely available, but it's making a big splash on the Middle Tennessee market. Nashville Barrel Company, Sample D, is releasing single barrels and small batch blends. This is the only single barrel in the lineup, which was B57.
B52.
And is labeled released like the B52s, exactly. They do not have a rye blend, but it was unavailable at the time to be included in this blind tasting. Mike, I know you've tasted many of these barrels. Do you think this is a good representation of MGP 6-year rye?
Yeah, you know, it's quite a few barrels that I've tried here from the Nashville Barrel Company. You know, probably 50-plus barrels, you know, that I've tasted. Their initial buy was around 200 barrels that they've purchased that they're making their way through. So there have been, I definitely would put release 3, which was barrel number 57, kind of in the dead middle of the taste, you know, range of all these barrels that I, at least that I've had. So yes, I mean, even though this is a single barrel, I don't think it's like some exceptional honey barrel, because I've definitely had some from Nashville Barrel Company that I would have thrown in that. And there's no way that I would have put it in this, you know, in this lineup, because it would have skewed everything. Everybody would have loved it and gone, oh, it's amazing. And that's something you can always find. You know, anytime that you go barrel hunting, you're going to run into something that's like, wow, this just is, you know, amazing, off the hook. You know, I do think this one, like I said, is kind of just right in the middle. This is the most expensive product in our lineup as well, at $110 a bottle. And one of the things that we talked about that when we were talking about price variation that really, you know, contributed to a lot of that price variation was they actually had to go through another broker. So they actually did not buy this, you know, directly from MGP. So
it made them broker?
Yeah, it is, you know. And I think what's interesting is that they're still selling it all day long, you know. And they're just people that are, they're like, yeah, you know, I don't really care if it, you know, even if it is twice the price of like the Templeton that we just talked about, or I should say 3 times the price of the Templeton, you know. So, you know, it's an interesting conversation. So I've asked a few people to chime in about this. Justin, what's some of your tasting notes around the Nashville Barrel Company here?
Well, it kind of reminds me of this bubble gum that I had when I was a kid. It's like really sweet, but not too sweet. This was a really good one.
Let's see. Denise, what do you think of the Nashville Barrel Company?
Well, when my I think my initial thought was this is probably my favorite. But then, of course, I went back and I tasted everything a couple more times. I didn't think that it was too sweet. I've often been guilty of describing rye as sweet. I sometimes get a brow beating for that. But rye is sweet, and rye can be a very sweet grain. So for me, this had a beautiful balance of the sweet and the spice. So I actually really enjoyed this particular rye because it had just a great balance for me, a nice mouthfeel. It had a nice long finish. I just thought I loved it. So,
Bob, what do you think about the Nashville Barrel Company release 3-year?
Well, as usual, I got to agree with Denise. I think it was well balanced.
Thank you, Bob. I love you too.
And it balanced the spice against the sweet very well. It wasn't cloying. It was, it's got probably the best finish of any of the ones we've had here. So, you know, that did it for me.
I agree with that as well.
Brent, what do you think of the Nashville Barrel Company Release 3?
This here is a party in your mouth. This is just full of spice and pepper.
That creates an interesting image.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You know? With that, I'm leaving the room.
But there's a lot of imagery with Brent that comes to my mind. Yeah. But, you know, I'm just glad today it is not clothing optional.
Yeah.
So, but this one had the biggest mouthfeel of all of them. I mean, as soon as I went through the samples, this one popped me right off the bat. Like, I was like, this is what I'm going to come back to. The finish on it was the longest. It had the best rye notes to it. And this is the one I enjoyed the most for me.
Me too, Brent. Me too.
And it was a party in Brent's mouth.
Okay, well.
Yeah. I don't even think COVID virus killer will kill that.
More than antibiotics.
Yeah. Remember what they were saying about drinking bleach? Yeah.
Might need some antibiotics after that one.
I'm going to go ahead and finish this now.
As a lot of people say, you know, with that product. So our SIPS rating here for the Nashville Barrel Company Release 3 is also going to be a SIPS rating of 3.
Interesting. How about a zinger?
Yep. We're getting around to it. So I had a few more questions here about the Nashville Barrel Company. We have some extra time to kind of talk. So this price point. So $110 a bottle. I mean, I guess the one thing that I thought was interesting with putting this in the blind tasting is almost none of you had had this rye before. It's brand new. I mean, it's not one of those things. As opposed to some of these other products that were in the blind have been out for, be it 3, 5, even 10 years. Did you find that, you know, now knowing that price point of 110, is there some correlation between, you know, quality and price?
There's definitely a correlation. It's very costly, and it reminds me of like a Peerless 2-year that came out, but there was their own product, and it was a high price point. You know, but it's, when you can get something that's a third of the price and it's close, it's not as close as this, but it's, you know, why do you want to pay $110?
Hmm. Yeah. And, you know, this is a question that I'm not so sure that a lot of the consumers who are around this product are really thinking at it, you know, in a comparative light. You know, I think one of the first products that I found some initial conversations was lining up against, which is, by the way, not in this flight, is the Old Scout Rye. You know, it's probably in a similar price point, you know, around here as well. And it also has some elements of availability that are very similar to Nashville Barrel Company. Very difficult to get the Old Scout Rye. Just not a lot of it. It's not, you know, although it's widely distributed, it's practically an allocated product. You know, and this product here with Nashville Barrel Company, not necessarily an allocated product, it's just being, you know, regionally distributed, you know, at select retailers as well. So, you know, I really wonder, you know, as both the audience, you know, that's being exposed to this product, you know, will they have some similar, you know, reaction to this that they would have with the Old Scout Rye? I mean, do you think that that's a comparable product, at least from a price point perspective? I'm not talking, you know, the taste profile, but, you know, both of those things are around that same, you know, price range.
Yeah, for the most part, they are. And, they, you know, they're the taste of the two of them is completely different. but you know, one's got their own product and one's a source product. So, you know, what do you go with?
Yeah.
I'm convinced if you get enough hype, you can sell almost anything at any price in this market right now.
Yeah.
But I think that speaks to the lack of transparency. I don't think the consumer, Mike, is looking at it and saying, gee, I can get MGP at 29 or 39 or 49 bucks, or I can pay 110. I think the lack of transparency allows these different rectifiers, if you will, to bottle stuff and put their own marketing spin and their own hype on it and charge what the market will bear, regardless of what the underlying product really is, where it was made, or what it cost to make.
Yeah, but on the other hand, the people who are spending $110 a bottle are generally going to be the whiskey geeks who probably do know where it came from. It's more of a hype thing with some of these guys. You know, some of the stuff we've seen go lately, it's just, I mean, average stuff for a ridiculous price when it's sitting right next to something that's as good, if not better, for a half or a third.
Like Pappy?
Yeah, well, you know, we're not even going to go there.
So, any other comments about my question here, you know, about price and quality having some correlation?
You know, I just want to chime in with one thing. You know, what I tell people when I'm at the store shelf and somebody asks me about something being expensive, I like to come back to comparable price points to other things found on the shelf. And what I really bring it up to is a distillery that I know really well, which is like Buffalo Trace, as an example. And so somebody says, you know, this bourbon is $100. I'm saying, okay, is it three times better than Eagle Rare? Is it five times better than W.L. Weller? And when I taste a product like this, I compare it to Sazerac Rye 6-Year-Old, $30 price point. And is it really three and a half times, four times better than that? Would I rather have four bottles of Sazerac 6-Year-Old versus this? Is it really one and a half times better than Thomas Handy or Sazerac 18-Year-Old? And, you know, I think those are tough questions. And I think you'd be hard pressed to answer that a product could justify that price point on the shelf. And I think, you know, what we have seen is over the next few years that some of these non-distillers are going to have a tough time staying on the shelf as these bigger guys catch up with supply and demand. And you're, you know, at $110 next to, you know, 20 or 30 products, they're in that $30 to $50 price range that are all phenomenal products that are just too hard to find right now, but in the future won't be.
Yeah, but I think the fallibility, I love your train of thought, but I'm not so sure that I've really seen consumer behavior, you know, really aligns itself, you know, like to that always. You know, I think that they... A lot of people tend to shop price. You know, it's that, you know, top shelf and bottom shelf, you know, pricing moniker that is so popular in many, many, you know, retailers that it doesn't really have anything to do with quality. It's like the stuff up the top is, you know, priced more than the stuff that's on the bottom shelf. And, you know, I think that's what I love about blind tastings. It cuts through all of that discussion, you know, of pricing. And I see that, you know, a lot of head nodding, you know, around that discussion. And the reason why we always love to, you know, come back around to it, you know, as well. So.
Now, I will agree with you. I mean, a higher price point will always drive sales in a luxury segment. You know, there are people that will always chase that highest price point because they assume expensive means quality.
Well, that's an age-old problem with both wine and whiskey.
Always, yeah. A problem.
Yeah. But I think the consumer is becoming more and more educated now because things are so easily findable on your phone. And so I think that that's going to be a problem as there's more information about these non-distillers, as the bigger distillers start having more product on the shelves. You know, I think it will drive prices back down, whereas we're seeing them drive up.
Well, and I would have to say one of the strange consumer, you know, behaviors that I see around products at certain price point. This, by the way, this comment is not unique to Nashville Barrel Company. I've seen this same thing happen with, you know, Old Scout or a lot of other products. They love the thrill of the kill. And, you know, they walk out with that $100 bottle going, you know, I got the thing that nobody else has, or I, you know, and a lot of head nodding, you know, again. And again, you know, they're just buying this, you know, purely based on allocation and availability without even tasting a drop of it, you know. And it's this very strange, you know, bizarre behavior that you have where, yeah, people are just literally going to the point of buying a car and not even driving it around the block for one, you know, even 20 feet. They're just saying, I'll just take it. I'll just figure it out as I drive off the lot. Or, you know, even better, they'll just leave it on the lot and say, well, I'll just let it sit there and appreciate and sell it for three times retail, you know, later on. Their intention was never even to enjoy the product to begin with, which I don't understand that. But anyway, so there are a lot of interesting, you know, consumer behavior, you know, that goes around price point. I love Jason's, you know, primer about how he thinks about, you know, price and quality. I think that's super solid, and I think that's great guidance. But I think what's interesting is you're seeing, you know, some other behavior that actually plays out. It's just bizarro land, you know, and totally a head scratcher, you know, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think some of the distillers are starting to react to that. I mean, we never saw a Buffalo Trace product that was more than $200, $300. And now you've got Buffalo Trace products that are, you know, $2,000 a bottle on the shelf. And that is purely playing into that price demand collector, you know, luxury goods segment. And I think you will continue to see that. I hope to see a day where we can all get our, you know, William Lew Weller and our Sazerac 18 on the shelf for sub $100 all the time.
I think the Canadians will win at the end of the day.
Alberta Rye for the win.
Except in hockey.
Well, maybe they could declare that their national sport that they could win at whiskey. So there you go. Hey, we'll be back in just 1 minute, and we're going to talk about our top pick out of our top three flight. We're also going to have some more discussion about this exercise with blind tasting MGP 6 year rye. We'll be right back.
It's not just the destination, but baby, the whole elation riding down this lover's avenue. As slow as a willow blows, or as fast as the whirlwind grows, we glide beneath the stars in cobalt blue. Look to the left, to the right, keep your eyes on the road, my darling, wondering if we're only passing through. Open roads and open windows, my hand is yours forever, sweet love, our eyes ahead on these back roads with a view.
Hey, welcome back to Sip, Suds, and Smokes. On today's episode, we're going through a blind tasting of eight products that are MGP rye. And, you know, it all is all about the science. So guess what time it is, Bob?
You've teased me long enough. I don't even want to know.
Guess what time it is, Bob? Guess what time it is, Bob? Bob,
what?
It's time for the zinger.
Still don't care.
Yeah, so, all right, so please check your meds. It happens to be our number one pick, which is actually kind of crazy. It's also a four-year product, as opposed to a six-year product, and the mash bill is different. It is 56% rye, 33% corn, 11% malted barley, and it's made from a rye that is actually sourced from Kentucky. So, our number one pick out of the blind tasting is the zinger, which was Wilderness Trail. How about that? Didn't see that one coming, did you? So I put Wilderness Trail in this blind tasting just to satisfy my twisted curiosity. Plus, I love screwing with you guys. So I knew this was going to be different. I knew that for sure. I've tasted this stuff side by side, but I had no clue. I didn't know if it was going to be like different good or different bad. I had no idea, you know, where you guys were going to stack this up. Now, I've actually enjoyed tasting through some 50-plus barrels of Wilderness Trail for store barrel picks as well, and it definitely grabs your attention at a price point of $60. Jason, what'd you think of this?
I really enjoyed this product. I thought that it was soft but sweet. It did have the overall rye notes with a little bit of grassiness, a little bit of hay. But overall, I thought this was a very complex and very delicious whiskey.
Wilderness Trail is definitely one of the darlings, you know, of newer distilleries that are coming online with their own product. The other one in my short list is New Riff. And I think they're both moving around, you know, some similar, you know, maturity around the same point in time. The other thing that I really like about Wilderness Trail is I think they're really kind of leading a discussion about low barrel entry proof. And one of the exercises that I saw that came out this year, and we'll actually talk about this on actually on our best of segment, is Michael Veach actually did a really great blind tasting of comparing Stetzel Well products with modern day products. And he really had this really great discussion about low barrel entry proof. And, you know, a lot of times that discussion comes up, why does stuff in the 80s taste so great? That's one of the parts of the equation is that they were doing everything at a lower barrel entry proof. And so this is one of the products where that is the case. I do think that the Kentucky rye itself that they're using in this is only used in one other distillery currently that I'm aware of, which is Castle and Key. So it's rather innovative that you're seeing something that's made with, you know, locally sourced products. Let's see other folks that were going to chime in on the tasting of this. Maury, what'd you think of this?
I thought it was an interesting whiskey. It's fairly complex. For me, the surprise of it is that it was a little bit hot on the palate. For me, it was the hottest one of the bunch.
Yeah. So this is at about 100 proof. Yeah.
But not the highest proof in the group, but it just tasted hot.
No.
I thought it was nicely made. I really like what they're doing with this. And to amplify what you're saying about the entry proof, I think the reason you don't see a lot of low entry proof is cost. It's more costly. You're filling up barrels with more water and less whiskey and by essentially proofing it down first. So I love doing it at the lower entry proof.
Well, it was the distillers that lobbied for that, James. Yeah. So, yeah.
Great whiskey. I thought it was really lovely. Nice mouthfeel. I agree with what Jason said. I think it's got you know, all the elements there, nice balance, and well made.
Well, I think one of the key words that Jason used that I found myself saying with a lot of the Wilderness Trail is that word soft. It really just has this very appealing, very mellow, you know, on the front edge of the taste profile. You know, a lot of ryes have this kind of attack, you know, element where you just feel this very sharp element right off the bat. And then it either, you know, the finish kind of mellows out or has a, you know, sharp finish on the back end. This is a what I would call a very round, you know, taste profile. It's very soft up front. There aren't these dramatic swings, you know, from the front, you know, to the back end of the palate. And, you know, a lot of heads, you know, definitely nodding around that one.
I agree with you, but at the same time, I also felt that it actually did taste a little bit young. For me, when I tasted them blindly the first time through, this was definitely the youngest on the list for me. And I was wondering why, of all the 6 years, this tasted younger. And this explains it. Mm. It is actually a little younger.
So, Maury, did you pick up any corn or something that gave you that, that led you to the... I mean, because this one has 11% corn.
Yeah, I definitely picked up some other notes. And when I initially tasted it, I said, it's just off. It's just different from the others.
Yep.
And as it opened up in the glass and it breathed a little bit, it came around and it was quite nice. But yes, I definitely sensed that there were either other grains in it or there's been something else in the barrel or the bottle. I was beginning to think that my mind was on palate or playing tricks on me. But now that you've revealed the zinger, I see that I was not crazy and that I noted these other elements in there that just stood out from the rest.
Carrie Ann, I know you've had a ton of the Wilderness Trail, you know, rye as well. What do you think about the taste profile of this and also kind of in the blind in general?
Well, so full disclosure is I am on the other side of having COVID and having my sense of smell and taste removed from me as my only symptom. So I didn't rank today, but I am familiar with most of these products, so I have some memory of them. I've tasted a lot of Wilderness Trace.
Trail.
All of that being
said, just this week alone.
tasting for me right now, because I really did try to taste these and see what I could do. But I think that like the most interesting thing to me during this loss of smell and taste is that the concentration on what it feels like in my mouth is so much more prevalent. And the mouth feel is something I think it gets lost a little bit while we're smelling and tasting wonderful, beautiful, strong aromas and flavors.
It's why I like that word soft. Yeah.
Mouth feel has some weightiness to it that I recognized out of the group. I wouldn't have picked it because I thought it was all MGP. But it does have quite a different mouthfeel from the others. And I love that, that weightiness of it. But Wilderness Trail in general, their four-year products coming up, I have just really enjoyed. I think that they, I mean, you can tell that it's younger than the rest of this group, I'm sure, but I think that they're aging. They show a little more age than their statements from a lot of the rye that I've tasted with them. I'm really a fan of Wilderness Trail. I think they're doing cool stuff.
Very much so as well. And I definitely, that was one of the reasons I intentionally, you know, put this in, you know, the lineup as a singer. That how interesting that you're talking about something that's 2 years younger, and yet I think is really outstripping, you know, the quality of some things that are not only a lot older, but, you know, are twice the price, you know, as well. Justin, what do you think of this?
So the defining characteristic of MGP for me is that menthol note. And when it's young, it's a little harsh. And when you get an older, well-balanced MGP, it enhances the taste. And obviously this one didn't have it. You taste the ingredients that they had the least of first, like the barley hit me first, then the corn, and then the finish was all rye. And the balance was incredible. And I think that what I love about blind tasting is it breaks the brand halo. It takes all the experiences that you've had before and it just really forces you to judge this one spirit alone. So I like this.
Cool. Excellent. Well, our sips rating here for the Wilderness Trail is going to be a 4.
That's classified.
So, great 1, 2, 3. A great discussion about each of those. And thanks for entertaining the zinger in this, everybody. You're pretty good and quite patient about it. So we have some more time here, and I had a couple of other things that I wanted us to go over.
Like my taxes.
Yeah, so I wanted us to talk about what was at the bottom here. Bob, you are going to introduce this for us.
All right, well, we like to include what was at the bottom of the blind tastings, and the number 8 pick of this group was Sample C, which was from James E. Pepper, and it was also on the lower side of the price range at $45, and the version we had in this tasting was the barrel proof at $114, so if you thought one of the top 3 picks was there because it was barrel proof, then this is the flip side of that conversation, that proof doesn't always translate to flavor, although I liked it, so... could this actually be that, you know, price and quality have a, you know, some sort of a correlation finally?
Justin, you had an observation about all this?
Yeah, I think that James Pepper, you know, usually high proof, especially for this group, is better. But balance wasn't there on this one. And it's really interesting because I've had good experiences with this brand when I knew what I was drinking. So drinking it blind, it really revealed things that games I was playing in my head that are gone for this sample.
Maury, I know you had a chance to taste this and had some strong thoughts about the James E. Pepper. What'd you think about the What did you think about this?
I thought it was not bad. It was not my favorite, but I thought it was, for me, it was more middle of the pack than bottom of the list. I was a little surprised when at the reveal as to what it was, but I did want to add that in case you were wondering, 33 1/3% of 45 would be $14.98.
I am so shocked that Justin didn't think of that first. Well, so you're both a doctor and a lawyer. You can figure that out like on the fly. Is that
That's
it?
Correct.
Scholar and a gentleman he is. That's
right.
I think I just heard Bob say, do not swell his ego that much, Mike. So
you couldn't swell his ego anymore. His head would explode.
Are you saying that there's a state limitation on the size of Maury's ego?
That's right. No, there's no limitation on it. The only thing keeping it in is his skull.
What's the label transparency on that? So, Jason, I know you had some thoughts here about the Shane Z Pepper as well.
Yeah, I was not a big fan. I can tell you, nosing it, I got like pure ethyl alcohol. On the taste profile, I wrote all alcohol, little flavor, and then almost like a chemical aftertaste that lingered in my mouth for a while. And I don't know what it is, but there's, I don't know if it's this barrel. I hope it's a bad bottle, but there's like an off taste to this one for some reason.
Yeah. So that's kind of my leading question here. I mean, what do you think went wrong with this product? There's some reason why we all stuck it at the bottom.
I didn't quite stick it at the bottom. I was in the middle with this one. Because I thought there was some that were worse, and that's the reason I put it in the middle. But for me, it was a lot of them got muddled in the middle. You know, they were just kind of, you know, like, okay, well, is this one really worse than this one? Is this one really worse than this one?
Yeah, they really didn't distinguish themselves in the middle. It was very, very hard to distinguish.
It was. And so this kind of, it kind of just left me right there in the middle of the pack. I didn't have it at the bottom. I had it closer to the top.
I mean, but doesn't that make perfectly good sense since they're all the same?
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't think it was that bad, honestly.
Hmm. Well, before I forget it, our sips rating for this was actually a 2.
Well, isn't that nice?
Jason, you were starting to speculate some things that, you know, could have gone on here. Bad barrel, bad batch, you know.
Bad cork. I mean, yeah. It could be a lot of different things. I mean, it could have been a bad filter when they filtered it. The water could have been too hard or too soft when they blended it down. I mean, there's a lot of things. I mean, that's the toughest part. It when you're a non-distiller is you're shipping these barrels across the country. I mean, they could have shipped them in a hot tractor trailer that cooked the whiskey too much. They could have shipped them cold that, you know, froze the whiskey too much. They could have banged around inside the truck and imparted too much of the wood. I mean, there's just so many things that can go wrong, especially when you're moving whiskey around the country like that.
Any quick comments in the next 30 seconds about lessons learned from the blind tasting you want to share?
Yes. Why did you subject us to this?
Can we turn the lights on now?
It was a Thursday. What can I say? You know,
well, thank God we're blind because Brent is not wearing pants again.
Any other lessons learned?
I know what 33 1/3 of everything is.
That's excellent. Yeah.
Jason.
I was going to say, have a lot of crackers and bread when you're drinking all the same things, because I kept revisiting things really, really quickly. And before I knew it, in like 20 minutes, I think I had like 6 shots of whiskey. And I was like, I'm going to need some dinner.
Yeah, for sure. Well, listen, I need to give a big shout out to Whiskey House Nashville for helping source some of these samples for this show. A stellar organization doing great things for other people using the power of whiskey. You can contact them at info@whouse.club for more information about membership or a tasting event you will never forget about.
Pants optional.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you're listening to us online, do yourself a favor and tap the subscribe button.
Tap it in. Just tap it in. Give it a little tappy. Tap, tap, tap-a-roo.
That is the easiest way to listen to our show. Or ask Siri, Alexa, Google, or Uncle Larry. Play podcast, Sip, Suds, and Smokes. We love your feedback, and you can reach us online anytime at info@sipsudsandsmokes.com. Our daily tasting notes flow out on Twitter at Sipside Smokes is our handle, and our Facebook page is always buzzing with lots of news. You'll also be able to interact with thousands of other fans on those social media platforms. Do us a favor and take the time to rate this episode if you're listening to us online. That's a great big help to us, and we get to see your feedback as well. I want to thank each of our co-hosts for being here. Carrie Ann, you are all things all over the place. Straight Up 615, Bourbon Stewart, and your new column on Whiskey Wash. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, so straightup615.com. Vinehair called me one of the whiskey Instagram accounts you should be following. So who am I to argue? Straightup.615 on Instagram. I run my mouth a lot. Sometimes you get a picture of my dogs.
I want to thank each of our co-hosts for being here as well. Justin, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Main man, Maury.
Bob. Well, it's usually Bob. Tonight it's Mike. Mike, fantastic lineup. I appreciated the zinger very much. And I do want to plug that barrel-proof whiskey kills COVID. So another reason to drink more whiskey. Anything above 60% ABV will kill the COVID in your throat before it gets to your lungs.
If you drink plenty of barrel-strength whiskey, you will never catch the COVID. And bleach.
I've just been drinking lots of whiskey, not barrel-aged whiskey. So there's my downfall. I'll have to switch.
You need to up your proof game, Mike.
Made Man Brent, thanks for joining us.
Thanks. I'm not sure I appreciated being abused like this with some of these products, but you know.
You're still not putting the pants back on,
I will just do it early and often from now on. Made Man Bob, thanks for joining us.
Well, like I had anything else to do tonight, so.
Good old boy Jason, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for the free booze.
And good old gal Denise.
Thanks, everyone. Be nice to me. I might be your nurse one day.
Ah, for sure.
Remember, I get to pick your catheter size.
This is good old boy Mike asking you, come back, join us for another exciting episode of Sip, Suds, and Smokes, and I will ask you to keep on sipping.
Do they make those catheters an extra large? Just asking for a friend.
They do.
That would be the diameter, Bob, not the length.
This has been a One Tan Hand production of Sip, Suds, and Smokes, a program devoted to the appreciation of some of the finer slices of life. From the Dude in the Basement Studios, your host, the Good Old Boys, will see y'all next time.